Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Just as a reminder, the Sail Legacy Kickstarter is live and ending on July 17th. This is the most ambitious all-play game made so far, with its co-op legacy trick-taking game for two vibes. And as I've mentioned before in a previous episode, there are over 35 missions with branching storylines and hundreds of components and secrets to discover, including detailed screen-printed meeples, which I freaking love. So do not forget to back it. Check out this game. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 119, Cretaceous Rails. Today, we are joined by Annabelle Journey, a first-time designer of this super cool-looking dinosaur game. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk with you again.
I know. It's been almost a full year since we met, so this is great.
Yes, last August at the Women's Game Design Retreat.
Heck yeah. No, it was a good group. I was very happy that I went to that. It felt like it re-energized me as a human and a designer.
That's perfect. Yeah, it was a blast.
So for anyone who doesn't know you, mind telling people about how you got into the hobby and how you started designing games?
Sounds great. Yes, I've been playing games all my life, especially in middle school. In middle school, my junior high floor collapsed. It was condemned. It was a big accident. There were teachers and students who got hurt. It was a terrible ordeal. The student body got split up all over town, and I wound up taking classes in portable classrooms in the high school parking lot. And one of these portables was a portable library. Just had shelves around all four of the walls of the portable. And my friends and I would hang out here in the beginning of each school day just playing cards. And one day, this high schooler just walks into our middle school portable. We're wondering, what the heck is this guy doing here? And he sees us playing cards, and he says, "Oh, you want to learn a really cool game?" And we're like, "Well, okay, sure." We were super excited. This high schooler was talking to us, so we were ready to agree to anything. And he broke out a map and these little teeny tiny robots. It was his own personal painted set of BattleTech. And he taught us BattleTech here in the wee morning hours of this normal school day and this chaos of attending classes in the parking lot. And it was something that we then looked forward to for the rest of the school year. We became good friends with this guy, and that really got me into the hobby. Fast forward many years and through many different sorts of gaming transitions, I played trading card games for a long time. All the Decipher games, Star Trek and Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. Collectible miniature games. WizKids did a Star Wars one that I played competitively for a long time. And with all those games, eventually just became a big burden, very expensive, as collectible and tradable games tend to be. And I started to play board games all exclusively, and have been doing that ever since. In 2012, somebody who would eventually become a good friend of mine, Caleb Michaud, started up Fieldbound Board Game Cafe here in Omaha, Nebraska. And as part of the process to get ready for this, he would invite people over to his house to catalog and organize games with all the bits and baggies and stuff. And it was there that I met a lot of people that would eventually form the Spielmasons, which is a local cooperative of Omaha board game designers. And that wound up being one of the core missions of Spielbound Board Game Cafe, which has a nonprofit side to it, to foster community board game design as a means of creating community and education. And one of the members of this collective is Marcus Ross, publisher of designer of many fun games, including his first one, which was Discount Salmon, which was the winning game of the first season of Tabletop Deathmatch, which was an old series of a YouTube reality series that Cards Against Humanity did for a couple of years, where they would evaluate game design submissions and bring them all together, and they had a very esteemed panel of judges that would take a look at all of them and play test them and award one of the winner. And Marcus won that first season with Discount Salmon. It was really inspiring, and I thought, you know what, I've been playing games so long, and I play tons of games every year. This seems like a really fun thing to do. I'm going to try this as well. And so I entered Season 2 with a game called Agere, which is a historical Euro game, and wound up being a finalist on that, and I've been designing games ever since then.
Man, I had no idea that existed. How is it to be on the show?
Oh, that was a really interesting experience. Well, got a free trip to Gen Con 1 year to get together with all the other finalists and get judged by the panel. And that was both kind of an intense and nerve-wracking experience, but also learned a lot from it. I got a lot of great feedback that I've been able to apply to my game designs ever since then.
But yeah, that sounds like an awesome opportunity. So then how did you go from like there to creating Crustaceous Rails?
Yeah, fast-forwarding a few years, my immediate designs after Aguirre had a few problems with them, but some interesting ideas that I wanted to return to. And Crustaceous Rails is really the combination of two older designs that needed to be merged together in a really weird, interesting way. And one of those was a game called Students of Kung Fu, for which I designed this really interesting worker placement mechanism where I had modular worker placement spots. So instead of being printed on the board in particular locations, there were tiles that I arranged in a circle on the board, and players, instead of going to one of those, would place their worker in between two of them and take both of those actions in either order. And every so often during the game, the tiles got mixed up and to create new action combos. And I thought that was a really cool thing. The rest of the game didn't work so well. Also revolved around a combat system that I could never really quite figure out. But this worker placement mechanism was something that I knew I wanted to return to, maybe in a larger scale format of some kind, so I filed it away into my notebook of game design notes to take another look at sometime in the future. And the game I designed after that was one called Dino Land, which was a dinosaur theme park game. When I first started working on that in about 2013 or so, it was an original theme. There were no other dinosaur park games in existence yet. And by the time I had finished designing that game, just a couple of years later, the market was flooded with these things. There were so many of them. And so I thought, this theme is no longer original and fresh. But I love dinosaurs. I need to put this one aside as well. It revolved around a really complicated economic system that just wasn't quite clicking. But a related theme I thought I might want to return to sometime later. And that's how Crustaceous Rails came about, was the marriage of a more original dinosaur theme and this worker placement mechanic, which I wanted to reuse in a design. And by putting these two things together, the very first brainstorm of Crustaceous Rails started to take shape on paper.
Oh, that's super cool. I love taking older designs and kind of combining them to see what you can make. How does Crustaceous Rails play exactly? Like, what are the rules?
Sure. It all begins with this modular worker placement system. There's a total of 6 different actions printed in various combinations on 16 tiles. And these tiles are arranged in a 4x4 grid, which we call the action grid. And a player has 4 workers called the executive pawns. And these go in between 2 of the sides of these tiles. And players get to take both of those actions in the order of their choice. And I call this intersectional worker placement. And those actions then set up the rest of the game. There's an action to lay rails into the prehistoric jungle, and there's an action to harvest wood from the jungle for use in construction of Time Resort. And there's an action to take time tourists on time safaris to go see their favorite dinosaurs and rate them on Dinosaur Yelp. There's an action to capture dinosaurs and transplant them into exhibits back at the Time Resort. There's an action to draw resort cards into a hand, the different exhibits that players can create, and there's an action to play those cards into the Time Resort tableau itself, granting players various combinations of special abilities, powers, and game scoring, all that sort of fun stuff. Because the theme of this, how I wound up with trains back in the Mesozoic, was every month for years and years now, I've been running a monthly train game at Spielbound Board Game Cafe. We started with Steam. We played through all of the expansions and all the different maps for that. And then we went on to Railways of the World, and we played through all the maps for that one. And now we've been working on Age of Steam, which is literally hundreds of maps. And we've been playing Age of Steam every month at Spielbound Board Game Cafe since before COVID. Yet need to repeat any map twice, because there's that many of them. But I love train games, and I love dinosaur games, and I thought these two things need to be together, because this, is an original theme that surely nobody else will design while I'm working on this one. that was the thought process. So while other dinosaur games would take their inspiration from Jurassic Park and create dinosaur theme parks in the modern day, as you know, this never works out well, right? Chaos and death ensue. It's just a bad situation all around. And so I thought we should go back in time instead and see the dinosaurs in their natural habitat. I thought about a short story that's always been in my mind that I've always enjoyed a lot. Ray Bradbury's A Sound of Thunder, which is about taking tourists back in time and seeing dinosaurs. And I thought this would be a really fun idea to loosely base the game on, and that's how we wound up with the Cretaceous Rails theme.
I have played a few train games, not a lot. I definitely have not played as many Age of Steam maps as you have. I think I've played like two. So then you have this theme, you've come up with the mechanics for it. How did you go about playtesting? I know you said that you're a part of a local group. Was that kind of most of your playtesting, or did you use friends? Because I know this is a little bit of a heavier game.
This was pretty tough because when I first got started, the Spielmasons was meeting every single month. So I had a nice built-in group of willing playtesters. We just take turns playing whatever each of us happened to be working on. And for a while, this worked out well. Then that darn COVID came around and really threw a monkey wrench into playtesting stuff. That made it a whole lot more difficult, especially for a game like Cretaceous Rails, which is not really something that you can do online in a prototype kind of form. So for about a year, I had to just make do with doing mock demos with here on the dining room table with playing two-handed, roping my wife into things occasionally and working with her on some things. Also spent some time starting to develop a solo mode for the game during COVID as well. And then once that was had died down and we were able to start meeting face-to-face again, get back into the pattern of regular playtesting. It was about that time, after we'd been meeting together, I had some new changes that I'd been working on individually and showed them off to the Spielmasons then. One of the other members of the Spielmasons is Alex Wolf. He is the owner of Spielcraft Games, independent publisher, and he was working on his own game at the time called For Glory, which is a really cool two-player gladiator-themed game, and I was helping him playtest that. After he saw the newest changes to Cretaceous Rails, he asked me if he could develop it, put finishing touches on it, and publish it under his banner after he's done with his next For Glory campaign.
So it was a local acquaintance that ended up getting you published with Spielcraft. That's really awesome that you were able to find someone that actually was close by. And I assume you worked together to develop the game, or did you just kind of pass it off and he finished it up?
We worked together. There's a lot of pivotal decisions that he landed on and then we would work through and wound up making a really big difference. Mainly how the Tableau buildings, the infrastructure cards, wound up being. When I brought the game back to Spielmasons after COVID, I had this really cool multi-tier Tableau building system where players could play cards on one level, then play other cards on top of those, and other cards on top of those. And the reason why they would want to do so is that the ones that were built higher up on this multi-tier Tableau building system, they were worth 4 points. I had separate special ability cards, I had order cards that players could use their resources to fulfill orders and earn more points at the end of the game. And those were worth even more points depending upon which level they were built on. And there were a few problems with this. It was fine, but it wasn't engaging. The different types of cards would be focused on by the different players at different points in the game. And Alex came up with a really clever idea. Why don't we combine all these things together? Each card in the game now is a card that does multiple things. There's a cost, which was the old order system, so now everything that players pick up from the board, the dinosaurs, the tourists, and the jungle pieces, instead of just fulfilling orders for points, they pay for the cost of the special abilities themselves. So now we have this combination of the orders paying for the special abilities, and tacked onto that, the endgame scoring, instead of having cards that just did endgame scoring, now everything is incorporated on these as well, in a sort of Concordia-esque type of system. Both Alex and I really like Concordia, and Alex came up with the idea, let's incorporate a similar kind of endgame system here and just incorporate that onto the cards as well. So now each card has three important bits of information, and there's not a need for separate decks. They all work together harmoniously, and they're all useful throughout the entire game instead of just at particular points. And instead of being worth more points depending upon the level that they're built on, now they become more powerful based upon the level that they're built on. And that opened up the game in a really exciting direction that really felt like Alex being able to take a really cool, fun design and bring it to the next level.
I am a big fan when people combine components, so like multi-use cards or dice. Like, I always find it interesting to see what they can do. As long as the graphic design is good, I'm a fan.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that was the final piece of the production puzzle, in fact. Our artist, graphic designer, and sculptor, all the same person. Also another local person. Graham Burkham is his name. Cretaceous Rails is a completely local production.
That's so fun. For anyone who hasn't seen what the game looks like, it's got a bunch of cool 3D little dinosaurs, which I feel like a kid would just look at that and just want to play with the dinos. Or adults, like I kind of want to play with the dinos.
Yeah, since it's been released, that's been one of the things that has been both a really great thing and something that weren't really expecting that we had to deal with. Was that a lot of gamers take a look at the finished product, and because of the bright colors, which were all really important for gameplay purposes, they take a look at the dinosaurs that are on the board and their multiple colors, and they think it's a kid's game, a family weight kind of thing. And so it's something that we've had to deal with in marketing the game, making sure players know what they're getting when they get into the game, because it's a lot deeper than that. So fortunately, once players play it once, it really opens up to them, and then the components become an asset, because gamers like, even if they're a stuffy Euro game player, people still like nice upgraded components. Otherwise, Castles of Burgundy Special Edition would not exist. And so the overall look of the game, it becomes a benefit, and people get excited that it's both a really cool looking game and a really fun, innovative, strategic one.
I completely agree with that. Would you say, like, weight-wise, if you were Board Game Geek, do you think you're, like, between 1 and 5? Like, where would you land for the complexity of the game?
I would put it at 3, and I think that's, once we have enough ratings, that's where it's going to land at, right around there. Right, that solid, medium-weight Euro kind of feel.
Cool. Yeah, so definitely not a kid's game. Did you have the game on Kickstarter, or was there a different way that Spielkraft decided to fund it?
Yeah, we did fund this on Kickstarter in fall of 2023. We did some promotions and marketing leading up to that. We brought the game to Origins of 2023, had a booth there, set up the game, ran demos during the convention. Had some nice giant banners hanging around the convention hall and out in the will call area for everybody to see and get excited by. We gave out promo cards there at the convention. About the same time, the expansion for For Glory was fulfilling, and we included promo cards with that just for fun to get the people who played that game excited for the next Spielkraft one. I took the game to Omaha Pride that year as well and gave out a bunch of promo cards to those people.
No, that's awesome. I'm a fan of promo cards, but sometimes I get handed them in the aisle of like a Gen Con, and I'm like, I don't own this game, and I feel bad throwing this away or recycling it.
Fortunately, they all had really adorable dinosaur art on them, and even if people were like, oh, I'm not going to back this, it's still a fun little thing to hang on to, because it's an appealing piece of art to enjoy. And the Kickstarter did really well. I was really excited by the results of that. We wound up having over 1,000 backers. We raised over $100,000 for it. Making the game itself, keeping tabs on the factory's progress, that was a whole interesting and educational experience.
Oh, were you a part of that as well?
Alex had already worked with factories for his For Glory game, but Cretaceous Rails is a much larger production. And it was interesting the things that came along that we just had no idea of what to prepare for. The factory originally printed all of the dinosaur pieces in the same color. That was not actually one of the colors needed for the game. They had to redo the whole print run of miniatures because of that.
Oh no, that sucks.
We learned why most games will print all their miniatures in a grayscale. Because those can all be printed at the same time, and evidently, if you want different colors of miniatures, those have to be printed one at a time, one color after the next, and that made the process draw out a lot as well.
I am familiar with that process.
And all that got done just in time for the tariffs.
Oh no! God damn it.
Yeah, so nobody could have foreseen that coming, how that all went down.
I mean, did anyone see COVID coming? Like, this keeps happening. So then, how long did it take from that initial idea of let's combine trains and dinos and make your design to people being able to actually purchase and play the game?
It has been a 7-year process. I started that in 2018, putting those first ideas down onto paper, making the first prototype that year, bringing it to some local cons early in 2019. And now, after the Kickstarter, it's now fulfilling. Most backers in the United States have their copies now. There was a separate shipment that went to QML to fulfill for retailer pledges and online retailers, and they're getting that really soon. The other hubs around the world are expecting theirs going out in a moment. We're almost done.
And how did it feel being like a first-time designer going through this whole process?
Really fulfilling. Very educational. Learned a lot from the process for sure.
On the design side, do you have any advice from things you learned?
Yeah, gosh. All the feedback that I've gotten over the years about this game, my advice would be when you get feedback, use good judgment because you know your game better than anybody else playing it for this isolated experience. And you can learn how to evaluate this feedback and figure out what's really valuable for your game. But even if it's not valuable for that particular game, it's all worth recording because some of that feedback are things that I definitely needed to keep in mind for other things that I've been working on at the same time. There's a lot of valuable knowledge that I've gotten from playtesters that if it wasn't relevant for Cretaceous Rails, actually wound up being relevant for other things that are in my back pocket as well. So that's my advice for game design is use good judgment, be open-minded, and don't be afraid to sit on feedback and reincorporate it for other purposes. Be adaptable, be flexible.
Okay, lots of advice. Did you have like a favorite and a least favorite experience while designing the game?
My least favorite part of the design process, and coincidentally, I was talking about this with Jackie Fox, the designer of Rock Hard on Blue Sky recently. We both hate making prototypes.
The crafting aspect. I love doing it. It's so fun. It's like in a little art project.
Yeah, I guess that's crafty in that particular kind of way. It feels like a chore at times, especially remaking components.
Yeah, that's fair. If you have a lot of changes, it is tedious. That's why I like Tabletop Simulator, so I can do a lot of those initial changes early on before I start printing out copies and needing to throw away paper or recycle paper. So then what was your favorite part?
It would have to be seeing all these ideas, both mine, the playtesters, the developer, being able to come together in one cohesive package at the end, and being something that everybody involved with the process can really feel good about and feel proud about and be excited about. And seeing the initial reaction to the game, the reviews, pictures of that people have been posting, playing it on their tables, really validating and fulfilling, and it just feels so great to be able to make a piece of art that other people are enjoying.
That is super exciting. Is there anything in particular that people are like gravitating towards when you see those reviews? Like a mechanic or a piece of the game?
It's really interesting because there's different things that are appealing to different people. I think that's one of the cool things that wound up happening with Cretaceous Rails. It's been able to hit a sweet spot for a very diverse group of gamers. Because it's an accessible game, it makes a lot of sense, both mechanically in regards to the theme, how it operates, while still being innovative and fresh and exciting. Combining mechanics, introducing twists on things that people have not seen before. And some of those twists, like the intersectional worker placement, those are things that people have mentioned a lot. The multi-tier tableau building system, that's something that a lot of people have mentioned. And of course, everybody's excited by the dinosaur art and the miniatures as well. It's got a great table presence that people are excited to show off.
And then do you have any other projects that have been signed that people should be looking out for?
That very first game that I mentioned earlier that I designed, Aguirre, I recently returned to last year, totally reworked, entered it in the Zenobia 2 competition, for which it was a finalist for that as well. And that's a game that is now at the point where, thanks to the help of our mutual friend Scott Grady, he's helping me create a really nice prototype of that so that I can show it off to publishers with a really eye-catching pitch. So that's one that I think is really close to being, game design-wise, it's done. It's almost ready to be shown off and pitched to people. There's another game that I have called Goddesses, which was actually signed by Gray Fox at one point, and due to COVID, the contract expired twice. That one I've also returned to and reworked and made even better than it was, and that's one that I'm also pitching to publishers right now.
Just the name Goddesses made me immediately want to try it out, personally. I love games where it's like, here's all these cool women, as I made her story.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that one. It's a multi-pantheon mythology game where all of the male gods have killed themselves off because they're violent men. And so the goddesses have inherited the earth. And they're rebuilding civilization based upon principles of art and fellowship and creating beautiful things. It's a nice cozy game using an upgradable action rondel. That's my featured mechanic for that one. To do a lot of fun stuff on a shared map and going after some personalized objectives. Yeah, so that one's really close. I'm really excited about it. And I just started a brand new project called The Travels of Sir John Mandeville, which is based on a 13th century travelogue for 500 years outsold the voyages of Marco Polo. And today nobody's heard about this book because John Mandeville, he made up the whole thing. He didn't actually go to any of these places that he wrote about. But it took 500 years for people to figure out, oh, there's not really cyclopses roaming the Mediterranean Isles. But the whole history of this particular book has always stuck with me ever since I encountered it. And it's something that I thought would make a really fun game. It's got a crazy historical and literary theme, which is really appealing to me, that I want to make more people aware of. That's a big motivation of mine, is making these obscure historical or literary events more widely known for people. And fun gameplay form.
I feel like that's one of my favorite parts about Midway Heroes, is learning that, like, passively. That's always fun for me. And that's awesome you're working with Scott. I didn't realize that. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he lives a few hours away over in Iowa. He attends a lot of our local conventions, and I've been playing games occasionally with him for several years now.
You probably have known him longer than I have, then.
In one form or another.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, then, for my last question of the podcast, if you could have been the designer of a game that you didn't design that was already published, which one do you wish you had designed?
That would probably be my all-time favorite game by my favorite designer, Stefan Feld, and that's his game Bruges, which in a loose way is an inspiration for some of the design philosophies behind Cretaceous Rails. The thing that I really love about Bruges is how the game itself challenges players to adapt to the changing conditions of what's going on. It's not a game where players can necessarily thwart each other, though they can certainly get in each other's way, but the game itself provides the main threat that players need to adapt with. And I love this idea of adaptive strategy, that players need to go into a game being able to get prepared for anything. They can't rely upon the same strategy every single play. They have to go into each new session fresh and ready to roll with things, to adapt on the fly to whatever those changing game conditions are. That's what I really love about Bruges, and it's something that I've tried to apply to Cretaceous Rails. Creating a board state that is always in flux that players have to adapt to, and creating replayability in that sort of fun, challenging way.
Yeah, I think that's great when that's the form of replayability. So it's like the rules stay the same, but just the flow of the board or the different cards that come out is like what changes the strategies that'll pop up.
Yeah, there's a really magical zen kind of flow to most Stefan Feld games that I find that I just really love to. There's a reason why he's my favorite game designer, because every game always feels new and fresh when I sit down to play. There's things that always surprise me that I get to experience every single play.
Now I feel like I want to go play one of his games again. It's been a while. Well, Thank you so much for being on the show. And for everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 119, Crustaceous Rails. Annabelle, thanks for being on the show. For anyone trying to find you online, do you have anything people can follow? I heard you say Blue Sky, maybe?
Yes, I'm on Blue Sky. I also have an active profile at Board Game Geek. I'm on Facebook as well. You can find me with Googling my name. Should be able to get you to any one of those three spots.
So is your username for Blue Sky just your name then?
It is on Facebook for sure. And Board Game Geek. Did I do something weird on Blue Sky? That's my full name. We're fine. How nice and consistent of me.
All right, perfect. Unlike me, I have like token gamer as far as like Blue Sky X and Instagram. And then, yeah, Danielle Reynolds on Board Game Geek. And DMR Creative Group for my website. So I'm a little all over the place, but I think it's fine. It's not too hard to follow.
That makes it so that it's always exciting when people stumble on you.
But this is really cool. I'm glad that we got to reconnect and talk dinos and rails. I feel like this is a game that I would enjoy playing.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been lots of fun talking with you about game design.
Heck yeah. Definitely next time we meet up, I want to see some cool new games, especially the Goddess one. I would totally try that out.
All right, let's plan on it.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out allplay at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.